NWP Radio.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project.
NWP.
NWP Radio. Welcome, listeners. This is a special edition of NWP Radio from the Resource Development Retreat in Albuquerque, New Mexico. This is your host, Tanya Baker, on assignment in Albuquerque, bringing you our special edition summer reading series. So I'm joined today by four of our friends and colleagues from around the country, and we're all going to talk about things that we're reading or we would recommend to you to read. Before we do, we're just going to go around and say our names and where we're from so that you can have a sense of who will be on the radio with us tonight. So, as I said, I'm Tanya Baker. I work at the National Writing Project in Berkeley, California.
Cecilia Patti in the Boise State Writing Project in Idaho.
My name is Maggie Brewer. I'm from the Eastern Kentucky University Writing Project in Kentucky.
My name is Grover Welch. I'm with the Arkansas Delta Writing Project in Arkansas.
Hi, I'm Kelly Saucy with the Red River Valley Writing Project in Fargo, North Dakota.
Hi, everybody. I'm so glad. I know we're all really busy at the RDR, but I'm glad you took this time out for us to be able to talk together about what we're reading this summer and to share it with our friends and colleagues around the country. So when we did this last year, we realized that people use their summer readings for all sorts of kinds of reading. They catch up on their professional reading. They read more with their kids. They read to have interesting discussions with their friends. They read to get away from it all at the beach or not at the beach. So I'd love to just have anybody jump in and start our conversation in any place they'd like. And it may be later I'll prompt you to see if there's some other things you'd like to share. But I'd like to just start with what's at the top of your head. So does anybody want to start?
I set myself a challenge on Goodreads every year, and I use the summer and winter break to really power through that challenge. So I'm at 16 out of 50 right now. I have a long way to go. So that's what I'm working on.
That's hilarious. I also have a Goodreads challenge. It is not 50 books, but I am on track.
I keep myself very busy with multiple books often. Like right now I'm reading Pure Dribble by Steve Martin. That's like my funny book. I'm reading Bear Stone by Will Hobbs with my son. And then I'm reading True. And then I'm reading, I just finished Shifting the Monkey, which was a great leadership book. So I'm kind of juggling my reading through the summer. I kind of switch back and forth a lot.
Need to laugh, need to get serious. Yeah. Excellent. Anything you'd particularly recommend off your list, Grover, and why?
Well, True is very interesting because it's about this young teenage girl who's a soccer player, and her family has recently lost her mother, and she's struggling to not only maintain her identity, but she's also trying to become a soccer star. And so it's all about, and the way the author writes her is very kind of bare bones, right down to the, I mean, I don't understand how you penetrate dialogue sometimes so tight that it just resonates with you. You go to bed, you close the book, and you just think, you know, wow. So it's a really powerful book.
Great. Anybody else want to jump in? I'd love to just, you don't have to look to me. It can be a conversation among all of us, but
I just finished Educated by, does anybody know if it's Tara or Tara Westover? And I mean, you see the cover, and as a teacher, you're like, Educated, what's that about? You know, so it draws you in, and I thought, well, I don't know if I want to read it. It's everywhere that I look. And then I found out it's about Idaho and takes place in Idaho. I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm from Idaho. Check it out. And the part that really stood out for me was that I found it all super interesting and very similar to The Glass Castle in some aspects. So kind of a little hard to read because of that. But I really connected with her feelings of not belonging and kind of that imposter syndrome. And, you know, she talks a lot about being homeschooled, things like that. That was my case, but I just remember feeling that my home life was very, very different from my peers. And that, you know, the food I ate, the way I talk, I spoke a different language at home. So it was just very different. And when my peers would talk about things that they would do, I was like, what are you talking about? You know, even they talked about different nursery rhymes or things like that, traditions. That's no context to connect to what you're saying. So that's the part that really stood out. And I remember in some part that she was reading this idea that comes from an Aztec word. It's called nepantla, which means this concept of this space in between. And a lot of Chicano or first generation Americans relate to that in the sense that you feel like you're not from here and you're not from there. And so I had that thought come to me as I was reading. And so I just had a lot of compassion and empathy for her. And then I just appreciated having another reason to talk about schooling versus education, and how the world can still prepare you, even though you're not schooled. And anyway, that's just another entry to that conversation. So I appreciate having that. In her book, you know, she talks about not having any knowledge about the Holocaust when she is in college, and how she was made feel. People thought she was joking, and you know, that was insensitive. And I connected with that, in that I had an adult ESL class, and my adult ESL students did not know what the Holocaust was. So I remember bringing in a lot of children's books to introduce them to this huge event, and their mind was just blown. So I don't know, I just felt a lot of compassion for her, and it's just really interesting. And I just admired her resilience to overcome so many things in her life, and then the courage to write her story. She had to change a lot of the names. It's a memoir, so I thought it was fairly courageous for her to still write it. So anyway.
Cecilia, the book I just finished reading has some things in common with yours. So the title of my book is So You Want to Talk About Race, and it's by Ijoma Oluo, and she is from the Pacific Northwest. And she also touches on experiences that people have in school and how sometimes the experiences that they're having in their home lives are very different from the home lives of other students in school. So I was given this book as a gift last week in Philadelphia during the Transformative Teacher Education Fellowship. And we were only asked to read the first few chapters so that we could participate in a community book group at the Unitarian Church, which was a wonderful experience. But I found throughout the week, even though I was really tired from our long days at Arcadia University, I kept going back to the book and reading a bit more in it at night back in the dorm room until I finished the book by the end of the week, because the author just writes so clearly and compellingly about issues of race in our country. And I'm from a very white part of the country, North Dakota. And people culturally kind of adhere to something called North Dakota nice or Minnesota nice. And sometimes they feel uncomfortable talking about race because they feel it's not going to be a nice conversation. And there was one piece in the book that really stood out to me. I don't know, Tanya, can I read just a tiny bit of it?
Please.
Okay. And this was pointed out to me by a Black man in the book group. We had talked about times when we find it hard to talk about race. And he pointed to this. Ijoma writes, "White people talk about race with other white people. Stop pretending that you are exempt from the day-to-day realities of race. Take some of the burden of racism off of people of color. Bring it into your life so that you can dismantle racism in the white spaces of your life that people of color can't even reach." I found that a real call to action. Mm-hmm. So even though I'm a little nervous about coming to this circle to talk about race, I thought I need to get over that and talk about this book because it really did make an impact on me.
Now I want to build off both of those books. First of all, by saying, so You Want to Talk About Race is on my nightstand right now. I haven't read it yet. And I promised a friend I would buy Educated as soon as I got home because she's reading it for book club and she wanted to be able to talk about it more. So
yeah.
I'm really excited to have your recommendations of both because they're both definitely on my reading list. And I want to say that not in the same genre or not in nonfiction, but I just yesterday finished Roxane Gay's Haiti, which is, she's Haitian, and it's a very small book of very short stories, short and some longer, that really form a sort of pastiche about a picture, a multifaceted picture of what life in Haiti is like and what it's like to be a Haitian American. And the first story, which is maybe two pages long, is from the point of view of a newly immigrated Haitian boy in school and his experience of being, you know, just pulled out and made fun of immediately. And it as for a teacher, I think that first story just grabs you by the throat. And then these sort of multi-voiced and multi-point of view stories about both the great rich family and heritage and cultural life in Haiti and extreme poverty and violence of the history of the island are really powerful. And I think she's an amazing writer, and the stories in her hands are really rich and evocative for this kinds of conversations as well.
So you read that.
It's awesome.
I think the last powerhouse book I can really say that just really affected me was by Nick Flynn, Another Bullshit Night in Suck City.
I love
was
Nick Flynn.
An incredible book.
And
I had a rough relationship with my mom. And that book is all about not healing, but accepting relationships like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was suggested to me by a professor friend of mine. And I took it and read it and just fell in love with the way he writes and then just the power that was behind the story. I love it when you connect with a story like that.
This might be interested in Educated as well. I think she had to reconcile with a lot of relationships, and it wasn't, like you said, necessarily healing or understanding or even forgiving, but just reconciling with the way things were.
There's a chapter like that in So You Want to Talk About Race when Ijoma talks about having a big race conversation with her mom, who is white, and how difficult that conversation was, but how it was such a necessary one for them to have, and how it occurred so late in life, surprisingly. So there are a lot of personal stories in the book that make the topic real. And there's a school episode that I wanted to tell you about, Cecilia. It's the story of a boy who has been kicked out of school because he's been disruptive and assaulted a teacher and sounds very violent and even almost like a criminal. And so at first, Ijoma is hearing this story from a friend and thinks, oh, yeah, that boy probably should have been kicked out of school. And then she sees a picture that the boy wrote, and next to a picture of himself is the number 5. And then it hits her, all this time we've been talking about a 5-year-old. And talk about how in school kids can really be misunderstood. And so she poses a lot of questions about did any adult talk to the child about why he was acting out or how he was feeling, or just why did they step up to be the adult in the room rather than, you know, labeling him as sort of a criminalist behavior, as criminalistic. And she shares this story within a chapter about the school to prison pipeline. And that just resonated with me because this week I'm working on creating a text set on mass incarceration during our resource development retreat.
The booklet is just getting bigger. Thanks, guys.
Yeah. So these are the kind of books you really want to discuss with thoughtful friends and colleagues and that rub up against our work together. Do people have other books they'd like to talk about that aren't those books?
Well,
go ahead.
I need to say that I'm kind of a lazy reader in that I love the short story. And so I'm a big sci-fi reader, and I've recently just started buying collections of sci-fi stories, especially classic stuff like from the 40s and 50s. And sitting down like at night and reading an entire Doc Savage story, you know, in one sitting is just so fulfilling for me. And it's so much fun and escape. And I just love those short, powerful stories as well. The collection I'm reading right now, the last story I just read was The Pevatron Rats, which was just this great forward-thinking time travel narrative that you just don't expect. And it was very interesting, but I like a short. I like David Foster Wallace, you know, Considered a Lobster, and all his essays, and sitting down and reading an essay, and then just sitting back and thinking about it, and you know, and not having to burden myself with tomorrow I've got to read another chapter. Instead, I can walk away and kind of go, I finished that, and I'm happy with it.
Well, going off of short stories, I actually really, really love to read collections of poetry. And right now I'm really interested in local poets. Some of those people, I'll just give them a shout out. Avery Guess is amazing. Brett Gaffney. Jeremy Payton writes poetry in English and Spanish, which is incredible. Let's see, Bianca Spriggs, who is an Afro-Latin poet and artist, which is people of color who are from the Appalachian Mountains, which is an awesome concept. Another Afro-Latin poet is Frank X. Walker, Crystal Wilkinson. So those are people whose work I just love to devour. And then right now,
Maggie, hold on. Before you tell us about that, do you read Ada Limon?
No, should I?
Well, she is from Northern California, and she spends half of her time now in Northern California and half in Lexington.
Oh.
And I saw her speak last summer, and I, in a total fangirl moment, walked up and said, "You are my favorite living poet."
Oh.
I think she's Latina, and so she does sometimes write about race in America. She also lives on a horse farm. She writes a lot about nature and horses, and I think she's beautiful. So I would add her to your list of local poets.
I definitely fangirled to Jeremy Payton after I heard him read. He has a book about the Chilean miners, and I've been to Chile, so I just felt like, but I'm Facebook friends with him, and he shares recipes, and he's awesome. And I actually messaged him and asked him if he would come read at our school, and he said, "What?"
Yay.
So, yeah. It's really awesome. So local writers are incredible.
And I didn't mean to interrupt you about to say something about a book you're reading now.
No, that's totally okay. The book I'm reading right now is one of those very light books that I like to read in the summer. I'm very lucky that my wife's school was doing like a, hey, let's give away a bunch of books. And she brought me home a huge pile. So I've never heard of this author before. His name is James Zagel, and this book is called Money to Burn, and it is about a judge who has kind of a beef with the person who is the head of the Fed. And so he recruits a friend of his and two people who work there. And his intention is to steal money that is supposed to be destroyed because it somehow is damaged. So it's money that is going to be shredded. And he's like, we're going to intercept it before it gets shredded, and we're going to get hundreds of millions of dollars. So I'm not very far into it yet. But what's really cool about the author is that James Zagel has been a police officer, a lawyer, and a judge before. So he brings like all of this great personal background to his writing. It's very well done.
I have to share a couple of local poets that I've read in the last year or two from the Upper Plains. So one book of poetry is called Dragonfly Dance, and it is by Denise Lodge Madeer, and she's an Ojibwe poet. And the dragonfly is a very symbolic creature to her, and that's a wonderful book of poetry. And then there's another one by Hyde Erdrich, who's based in Minneapolis, and it's a super long title. You have to give me a second to find it, but that book of poetry is so amazing because she's really playing with the materiality of the text, and it's you know, there are references to the digital world. She's also an artist. She makes video poems. And it starts out, The Curator of Ephemera. Mm. It's a super cool title. Let me get it totally right here. And Hyde also is from the Turtle Mountains. So the full title is Curator of Ephemera at the New Museum for Archaic Media. Yeah, I think one of my favorite titles ever. And the book will definitely make you think. I read about half of it at Christmas, and then from time to time when I'm ready to take on an intellectual challenge, I'll read another poem. You know, it's one of those that takes some time for to sink in. Yeah.
Well, along those same lines, I'm also reading the lines of intellectual type of reading, all that. I'm reading a book that's my 3-year-old son's newest favorite book called We Are Growing. And it's a elephant and piggy like reading book by Lori Keller. And it's about grass. I took this class this summer that dealt with nature and connecting it to literature. And this is a book that was introduced, and I immediately bought it for him. And it has all these funny sounds, like zoom and whoop. So each one of these, it's about actually finding your uniqueness and celebrating the uniqueness in every individual. So each of these blades of grass talks about when's the tallest and when's the thinnest. And there's one that's like, well, I'm not the anything, you know, and then zoom, they get cut, and they're all back the same. So, and my son just thinks it's so fun, and he joins in the sounds, and
I think I probably, you and I both have sons. Your son is little, and my son just graduated from high school, and this summer I got to read the same book with my son, and I just realized, kind of sadly, that maybe the last book we read together. Going way back to when we read books like I'm Growing together. Yeah, family reading is great, especially in summer.
Well, I'll tell you two stories about that, Kelly, just so you don't lose hope. One is that our colleague Joe Balacero, who's not with us here but is at the Resource Development Retreat, for as long as I've known him, his sons are grown, but they have a family vacation once a year, and they read a book aloud together on their family vacation, even though everyone is a grown-up in the room. So, and my stepdaughter's actually, for Christmas, we got a poster of 100 books you should read. That's a scratch-off poster.
Oh,
so
cool.
Over Christmas vacation, we scratch off everything that any of us had read, and that left about 20 books that we hadn't read. And we've been buying the books that we haven't read and like passing them around. So, and they're like, we got to get as many done before I leave for college. But I'm like, you know what? When you come back at Christmas, we'll still have a few to read. So
I like those traditions.
Yeah, it's really
fun. That's great.
And then actually I read one that they'd already read. And I said, I'm finished. And they said, but did you put your initial on the poster? It's like serious business at our house, this family reading.
That's awesome.
That's cool.
Well, my son's absolute favorite book is The Monster at the End of the Book.
That was my favorite book when I was a kid.
That's why I thought because of Grover. And
Grover.
So
I'll tell you one better is that I have a 12-year-old autistic son who has that digitally on his iPad.
Oh.
He has copies of the book, and he falls in love with it every time he picks it up.
Yes, every page. Turn the page. Well, I mentioned that only because of Grover. And so I'm really excited to tell him I actually met a Grover. And I'm just going to leave him with that and have him imagine whatever he wants to imagine.
Well, I know.
I'm
talking about such great reads, and my big expectation is my next book that I've got kind of set aside to read, and that's Children of Blood and Bone.
Mm.
Oh,
yes.
Yes, because I've just finished rereading Chinua Achebe, Things Fall Apart.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And then somebody was like, well, you've got to read Children of Blood and Bone. And then they sent me a quote from it, and I was just like, the quote just hooked me. You know, they killed my mother. They took our magic. They tried to bury us. Now we rise. And I was just like, you know, this is a trilogy, you know, situated in Africa that I think is going to be very intriguing.
Is it fiction or nonfiction?
It's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's about a young African tribal girl who takes up the cause of restoring magic to the to her nation.
Is it fantasy?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think my kids are reading those.
Mm-hmm.
They love them. And in fact, they're another thing that's on my list that I'm supposed to read.
And they're supposed to be fabulous.
Yeah.
Everybody that has read it keeps calling me and saying, you've got to read this book. And
yeah,
like, well,
I think that's right.
Well, you mentioned being a lazy reader, and I don't know what that means. But I have to say that Educated, I listened to it. By reading, I meant I listened to it on Audible. So I don't know that it's lazy.
Oh, I get by on Audible all the time.
Yeah.
I read a lot of books on Audible.
That's how I can read so much.
Yeah, I think that totally counts. And I make sure to tell kids that too.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of kids think they can't read or don't read. And I'm like, oh, no, just pop it in. Totally
mm-hmm.
counts. Brain's working.
I was at a basketball game last year, and a kid ran up beside me and said, Mr. Welch, what are you listening to? And took the headpiece out of my ear and stuck it in his ear, and he goes, you're reading a book.
I have never really been into audiobooks. I'm a very visual person and a tactile. I love touching books and flipping back and forth and everything. But I have had to get into audiobooks because of the long drives that I make in North Dakota. I just have to have good books. And it's made for some interesting moments. Like I was listening to Moby Dick again after many years. And it was during the time when I was driving back and forth between Fargo and Standing Rock Reservation. And once I was listening to a scene in the book where there's a storm, and we had a storm rolling across the plains, and I was going into it. And it was just the atmospheric feel was really unforgettable.
That's really cool.
Well, I had a friend in college who was a professor, Rob Lamb, who offered to let me ride with him to a conference. And as we left, he was listening to The Song of Ice and Fire. And he was like, oh, I just finished, you know, all the Lord of the Rings books, and now I'm starting The Song of Ice and Fire. You know, and I was like, well, okay. And so I listened, you know, the whole way. And we had even had a discussion over the book about things in the book. And then I was like, you know what? I'm going to start listening to books as well as reading them. And so I really picked it up then. Now, I drive in the car with a book plank.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm like you, Kelly. I'm a visual tactile as well. So it took quite some practice to be able to listen to audiobooks. And so if I hear someone say, I tried it and I can't focus or it doesn't work, you know, I suggest that they give it a few tries, because it's definitely, if you're not used to reading that way, it just takes your brain some getting used to. And I'm glad I didn't give up.
Well, and I think it does depend on the book, because
yes.
I found that I didn't like to read Stephen King books that way, because it was hard for me to like hear some of the like gory mm-hmm. scenes. But other books I'm like fine with. Mm-hmm. And then I listened to The Astonishing Life of Octavia Nothing.
And I was like,
I love that book so much.
And I hated it. And our director, Sally Martin, was like, love, love, love. And I was like, why did I hate that book? And then I told her I listened
yes.
to it. She said, no, you have to see it. And I was like, okay, I got to do it again. So I think it depends sometimes on the book.
There's so many places I want to jump in. Like, first of all, I want to say my first audio book experience was terrible. It was a terrible narrator and a dumb book, and it took me a long time to get over that. But I think it does. You have to have a match of a good book for you to listen to and a book that has a good narrator. And so I would agree, both yeah. for yourself to train yourself, but also to try multiple, you know, mm-hmm. multiple examples before you decide whether you are or not a fan. But every time I tell the story, people think I'm so weird, but I am really an auditory reader, and I dream in the syntax. If a book has a really interesting syntax or really interesting voice, I dream in that syntax or voice, and it doesn't work if somebody else reads it to me. So like for me, I have to like hear those voices. Like I have to create the sounds of the language in my head, and then it infuses, mm-hmm. like I think that way for a little while, and I dream that way for a little while, which makes me, I'm going to stop talking after I say this. The one book I have to recommend, which I just finished reading on my way here, is called Chemistry, and it's by Waiki Wang, and it's a tiny book. If you're a lazy reader, you can read this in an afternoon. It's a first-person point of view. The main character is a young woman who's in a chemistry PhD program, who hates her chemistry PhD program, and it really needs to get out of it. And what ensues is her sort of breakup with chemistry and a lot of other things. And it's, like I said, it's all first person, and it deals with coming of age and making your peace with your family and like figuring out who you want to be in the world and what relationships and what happens when you break up with things. And it also has this really, to me, interesting running thread about the sexism of sciences, particularly at the PhD level, which I'm not surprised by, but don't have access to. So it was really interesting. And it's just a lovely little book. I went around thinking in these kind of short declarative sentences in my head for days, and I just felt like I had that character with me. It was lovely. So I'm recommending that, Chemistry.
We've all noted it in our little classes. Well, this is great to have
yeah.
recommendations of new books to read. Going back to the audiobook conversation, it's really fun to hear a book in the author's voice.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just read the new dystopian novel by Louise Erdrich, but then I heard that she has recorded herself reading the book, and now I want to listen because
yes.
she's probably my favorite living author.
Yeah. The Future Home of the Living God.
That's the one.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Yes,
I read about that.
Hear that, yeah. All right, listen to it. I definitely recommend, you know, to listen to the sample. I also had a bad experience with should we say the book?
We can, yeah.
Book? Okay. Room.
Oh.
And a fantastic book. But, I mean, it's difficult, right? But in the audio, the child sounds like Elmo. And so it was so difficult to just find it believable and really take it seriously. I mean, it was years ago when that first came out. And I remember we were reading it for a book club and I had to stop. I said, I don't like this book. And I said, did you read it? Well, no. And then I read it.
That would be hard for me because my husband read the Harry Potter books aloud to my children, our children, and he used the Elmo voice for Dobby. So Dobby was...
Yeah, that's really funny.
I read Beartown by Frederick Bachman.
Oh, I love Frederick Bachman.
And I just fell in love with Beartown. I didn't realize there was a sequel. So the sequel just came out this year, and I have it on Audible, and I'm listening to it, but I don't like the narrator.
Mm-hmm.
So, and I'm realizing that I'm not loving it as much.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that might be why. So I think I might need to read that one.
Now, speaking of Harry Potter, so they're read by a British person, but it's weird. You know, there are different British accents,
mm-hmm.
and I don't like the particular one. Like, that's not how I fit. It wasn't in that. But Thousand Splendid Sons is read by a person from Afghanistan, and that's very cool because everything's pronounced correctly.
Yeah.
Yes.
I have The Lord of the Rings read by Ian McKellen.
Oh,
that's fabulous.
Cool.
I mean,
cool.
It's got a musicality to it that, like, sometimes I don't even listen to the story. I just like to listen to him talk.
Yeah.
Because, like,
yeah.
You know, if there's somebody I could meet, that would be who I would like to meet.
Mm-hmm. Now, see, you could.
No, you said it on the radio. If anybody has any last recommendations they'd like to make, this would be a great time. But if not, we can say goodbye and thank you.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you.
This is a great circle. I know you all were making lists. I was making lists. I'm sure the listeners are making lists. And in fact, they'll be able to find a printed list on the radio page when this goes live, because our good friend and colleague Luke Okama has kept the list for us throughout the conversation, and he'll publish that along with the radio show.
Awesome.
Thank you all very much.
Jealous.
It's been really fun, and I'm sure our listeners will really appreciate all your recommendations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to NWP Radio, a production of the National Writing Project. NWP.